From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. There are now some tweets that are coming out of SEC Media Day, SEC Media Days, which dealing with Mizzou. Missouri is talking today. Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com tuning some things out. Also, some other beat writers. We'll look to have Gabe on either tomorrow or Friday. But Eric Beisel, if you remember, made the headlines with his, I'll say, trash talk against about Arkansas last year, but then Missouri backed it up and beat Arkansas. And then if you remember, Nate, when we had Barry Odom on the show, it seemed like he was not a huge fan of the comments from Eric Beisel and said that won't be happening again. Well, here's a quote from Eric Beisel when asked about Arkansas. He said he would not talk about Arkansas, but then said, "That team down south, they'll always be below us. At least geographically, they will be below us." So, probably have to hear it to get the proper context. But
did he really say, "At least geographically, they'll always be below us"?
Right.
I mean, it's factually true if you look at a map.
Your thoughts? I mean, is that really trash talk? He's just trying to...
A little bit of trash talk.
Gabe tweeted out, "Eric Beisel said he wasn't going to say much about the rivalry with Arkansas. Then he said some stuff. Video in a bit." That's my favorite. Hey, I'm not going to talk about this anymore. Coach told me not to. But let me say a few things first. So that's why I love Eric Beisel. Thank you. We'll get more of that hopefully in the next couple of days from Gabe DeArmond at PowerMizzou.com. Right now we have Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. We did not coordinate this, as he wears a t-shirt that says "Bring Back the Kings," and I could just throw that hat right there at him, and we understand that great minds, or maybe a great mind and a mediocre mind, think alike in some way. See? Respect.
All right.
Thank you very much.
I think that's a Charlie Hustle shirt there.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go. Go to Charlie Hustle. Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. How are you today, Rustin?
I'm doing well.
So you watched the All-Star game, I'm sure.
I sort of did.
Right.
Everyone
just sort of watches it. No one's locked in, I don't think.
Yeah.
Even if you're there.
So I was kind of following along.
That's fine. So Mike Boddicker. okay, let's rewind all the way. So I get on the show this morning and say, "Hey, I'm watching the game, but it's kind of boring, and there's nothing riding on it. Home field advantage in the World Series doesn't matter." So I'm kind of going in and out and watching it. But then they do these interviews where they're interviewing George Springer while he's out in the field during the game, and then Bryce Harper, and Bryce Harper was interesting. I like to hear him talk. And then Bryce Harper talks about the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott and Zeke, which I'm sure the Redskins/Nationals fans were thrilled with. But I'm thinking, okay, this is pretty cool. You're never going to see this in a real game or a playoff game or a regular season game. I'm enjoying listening to this. And then they had some sound from Bryce Harper after he's walked by Betances. He goes to first base. He's talking with the first base coach, and they turn his mic on. And he's talking, "Yeah, that's just a guy that I feel like you go in there and just take. He's going to end up walking you." And he's kind of talking back. Cool stuff. I don't know. I'm a baseball guy. I like that stuff. Mike Boddicker comes in studio and says he hated it. It was horrible. It disrespects the game. And Nate, did he not say he will never watch another All-Star game for the rest of his life? So
that's
where we're at right there. So what do you think? Sam Mellinger wrote about this today in the Kansas City Star, but your thoughts on interviewing players in the middle of an inning while they're out in the field and trying to spice some things up during the All-Star game for the viewers?
I mean, I don't have an issue with it. I mean, I certainly think it doesn't respect the game, I suppose, but I mean, there's lots of things about the All-Star game that don't do that, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of a good example, but it does seem like it's an exhibition with fans voting on the starters and Omar Infante almost starting at second base and that, I mean, I guess in that way, it just doesn't seem like it's if it's not going to count, for 10 years they had this thing where it determined home field advantage in the World Series, and the players, what doesn't, in my opinion, hot take, what doesn't really necessarily respect the game is that if you have home field advantage riding on an exhibition game, and then you have managers switching out the players every inning and trying to get everybody in the game and treating it like an exhibition, yet you've got the Royals had home field advantage 2 years in a row based on this exhibition game. That seems like a strange way to respect the World Series when you have, an exhibition game. Look at me getting fired up about that.
Now we're talking. Now, see, I didn't over there.
I didn't think I had an opinion, and then I started talking about it, yeah.
Why is the All-Star game an exhibition game?
Because it doesn't count.
But it did count for 10 years.
And so then it wasn't.
So it wasn't an exhibition
game. I guess it wasn't, yeah.
Right.
See, it's,
but it was treated as
such. That's the part that frustrated me, because I was in favor of it counting. The All-Star game was not considered an exhibition game when Ted Williams hit a home run and considered it the biggest moment of his baseball career. Right, he considered that something that mattered deeply. And then it was a different time, because that was the only time you got to see American League players against National League players. They were two very different leagues with different rules, and players that didn't cross over much, and they didn't play against each other at any other time. So it was different. I get that. We'll never go back to those days. Those days are long gone. So people that want to be nostalgic about that have to understand that that'll never be the case. But I always got frustrated with this concept of trying to make the game matter again. And I would hear from every crusty old sports writer and baseball player that it's an exhibition game, damn it. They're trying to make something count that doesn't count. It's an exhibition game. Well, it's not an exhibition game because it does count now. And no one would accept that. And I shouldn't say no one, but not enough people would. The vast majority of people would not accept that. And so they wanted to go back to it not counting, and they want it to mean less. And I still don't for the life of me understand why baseball people want the best All-Star game in any professional sport to mean less. I just don't get it. Because these other All-Star games mean nothing, and no one cares, and no one watches. The Major League Baseball All-Star game is the only one people watch. And I just don't understand why then you would take that and try to make it like the other ones. How about that for a hot take?
Yeah.
Oh, look what you walked into.
And by the way, I was all for the microphoning up, and because I don't think that takes away from the game. I don't think it hindered Bryce Harper's ability to play baseball. And maybe that's what... I wish I would have had Boddicker in here. He actually would have thrown me through a window if I'd said this. Maybe that's what some baseball purists hate, is that it actually exposes the fact that baseball players actually only do nothing but stand around for 90% of the time, and they don't want it to be realized that that's the case.
He also didn't like when Nelson Cruz asked Yadier Molina to take a picture of him with
Joe
West.
That's a bit of a making a mockery of it. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you see in the other All-Star games and everything. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't disagree with you, Nate, but it does seem like if you're a team in contention and you're the Cubs last season and you won, did they win 100 games? I believe they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have home field advantage in the World Series because the American League won the All-Star game, including all these players that are not in the postseason or from other teams. It does seem like that rule... To make it, that way of trying to make it count just was a little bit flawed.
Well, certainly it's not like the most ideal way, but it's still flawed to say whoever has the best record.
No, it's true. I mean,
that's a flawed way to do it. It's maybe less flawed than.
I mean, if you have an unbalanced schedule, it's always going to be flawed.
Right. I mean, if the American League is vastly better than the National League as a whole from top to bottom, and the Cubs take advantage of that to win more games, then is that fair?
No.
You know, and I'm not saying that was the case last year. I'm just saying that's potentially the case sometimes. And before they had the All-Star game determine it was determined on a rotating basis. Because back then it was determined that wins wasn't it was not an appropriate way to determine who should have home field advantage because they play completely different schedules. And so, remember that? It was rotating. Yeah.
Well, it's still unbalanced schedule, and depending on the league and the division, because right. if the Royals could hypothetically, or the Indians, whoever, could beat up on the AL Central and have a better record than somebody in the AL East.
Absolutely.
So if it was up to me, I think, without thinking about this that much, I would award home field advantage to the league, which has the better record during interleague play.
That's been proposed.
Yeah, you're pointing to me for.
Is that your? Was that
yeah? Like I made it. That's right. Yeah, I just pointed.
Remember,
Stephen.
No, remember
I like
that months that. Ago, Stephen brought up the same point.
Right, I don't know. I don't know you.
I just mean he made right. he made a good point, so I'm pointing at you. No, see, I don't know why I pointed at you.
How things work around here.
Yeah,
and I'm so like, I mean, I get it. Like, so we all, you know, watch the Royals because that's one of our, you know, that's part of our job. Even you more so, you have to watch everything and cover everything, but. So, like, I'm just curious from a personal standpoint. You said you kind of watched it. Is it just because you're sick
of baseball? Do you want to be honest?
Yes.
Why I did not watch it more?
Okay.
Because I have MLB TV, and I don't have cable right now. I have Netflix and MLB TV and lots of streaming devices.
Cord cutter.
And as I went to go watch, as I went on, because you can get it on MLB TV, but as I went to turn it on last night, I realized, unless you fake that you have a cable subscription with Fox, they won't let you have it. So I was sort of following along the game, but I was not going to try that hard to find a way to get it.
Like, if you really wanted to watch it, you could have watched it. But, you know, and I get it. You could maybe, I mean, obviously no one would blame you if you wanted to take a break from baseball because that's your job. But I don't know. How many people? Like, I got a couple of friends who are like, man, I can't wait to watch the game tonight. It's interesting how people feel about the All-Star game. Like, for me, I wanted to watch Vargas pitch. Of course, I wanted to watch Salvi and watch Moose in there. But I found myself in that game just, man, this sucks. This is kind of boring. You know, let's get Moose in there. All right, let me see if, you know, when he faced Holland and Wade Davis, that was exciting. And so that's why I did like something different. Switching it up, changing it up. If there's nothing on the game and this is just to showcase baseball, well, how can you showcase the sport and try to get more people to like the sport, showcase some of the personalities? And Bryce Harper clearly is one of those guys. And so I didn't see the harm in it. And like I said, I really did like, and they didn't do it enough. And obviously the players would have something to say about that. I liked when they opened up the mic, him talking to the first base coach about facing baton tests and little things like that. I think that there's a way that could add to the game. Like, I love watching, and it's usually after the fact, I love hearing the different sounds of like Chiefs players or NFL players mic'd up to hear what they had to say. It would be different if it was live, but that was live last night. I thought that was cool. And so yeah. I guess anything that adds to the entertainment of what I thought was a boring game, I'm all for.
To me, the only exciting thing about the All-Star game, I mean, the outcome is sort of not that important, and to me, it's just the matchups between the pitchers and the hitters that you stumble into, especially in the early innings. And so sometimes I think, you know, we put so much focus on the first half of the season, how guys are playing. It's also the argument about, you know, should a guy be an All-Star because he's one of the best players in the league year after year, or should because he's having a great first half of the season? And then you have guys like Clayton Kershaw, who obviously didn't pitch last night because they pitched on Sunday. If it was organized, and I'm not saying it should be this way, but I'm just saying this would be more entertaining. If you had, you know, three or four or five of the best starting pitchers in baseball lined up to pitch the first couple innings, and then you had the matchups that you would see, you know, pitcher versus hitter would be slightly more entertaining. And as Nate was saying before, part of the reason the All-Star game was great 25 years ago was because that was the only time we saw those matchups.
Yeah.
And now we see them, you know, not all the time, but, you know, regularly. So,
yeah,
to me, that's the one thing that I enjoy seeing is, you know, Bryce Harper coming up in the early innings and facing Chris Sale.
Yeah,
you know?
like make sure it's Aaron Judge. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so he struck him out. So that was good.
So yeah, I mean, but
I mean, it's Robinson, like, Cano against Wade Davis is a pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, that was
darn
great.
Cool matchup. You know. And I think that's a big moment to see, you know, Robinson Cano hit a home run in extra innings against one of the best closers maybe in the history of the game. I agree with you on that. And that goes back to just why I say, look, we get to see that stuff sometimes now. We just saw our Royals play against Clayton Kershaw. So the novelty of that wears off a little bit. And that is why, again, and I won't keep going back to it, but that's why I like the idea that the game, they tried to make the game matter, because you have to find something else to make it compelling. If it's something that, you know, now the idea, the excitement of watching those matchups, there are literally every day of the calendar, baseball calendar, there is an interleague matchup now. All year long, there's an interleague matchup every single you know, day. So, to go back to what you said, Stephen, though, about the interviews on the field and those things, this goes into other sports, but I think baseball needs to do this even more so than the other sports. One of my favorite moments when we go to Arrowhead Stadium in pregame, what they've been doing the last couple years, is when they show those live shots inside the locker room, and you see the players in there listening to their headphones or doing whatever they're doing in the moments before they're about to go out onto the field. It just gets you excited. It gives you like a peek into the lives of these players and what it's like to be in there in the moments before a big battle. We've been starting to do that on the Sporting Kansas City broadcast. We've got, they allow us to take a camera into the locker room, and we can show some of Peter Vermes with the electronic board up there showing the players what the tactical changes are going to be in the you know, second half of the game. And we don't give too many of the secrets away or anything like that. It's just a glimpse, but it's still a glimpse that the fans get that they wouldn't otherwise have. And I think anything you can do to open up the, either whether it's Bryce Harper talking about his approach against Betances or just Bryce Harper's thoughts about NFL, get to know one of the biggest stars in the game a little bit better in a way that we hadn't otherwise gotten to see, I don't see how that's a bad thing, because I think that anything, especially baseball, I think needs to do it even more than these other sports to try to bring more fans and younger fans into the game. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Not going to happen. Baseball is different. As you've seen, Mike Boddicker now will never watch an All-Star game for the rest of his life based on a couple of interviews that we saw last night. So, and I showed you different people that were reacting the same exact way.
I'm not saying that 56-year-old people don't matter. They matter a lot because they have more money. But
easy, I'm old.
I know.
You know, it's interesting, Nate. That's actually a great point. And it's funny that you see things like that in the NFL, yet I don't know that you see shots like that often in baseball, yet their clubhouse is open to the media every day, you know, within, you know, 3 or 4 hours of the game. It's not like you can just go into the Chiefs locker room, you know, at 9 a.m. on a Sunday and go talk to players. It's funny how that some things traditionally are open in baseball and some things are more taboo.
Because just imagine if, like, Fox Sports Kansas City tried to go to the Royals and say, hey, we want to have a camera inside the clubhouse, like, right before the game and show shots of the guys warming up, like, you know, or not warming up, but...
Just, you know, I mean, a lot of it's just sitting around. But
yeah,
I think,
it's,
you know,
different,
I mean,
too, because baseball...
But, you know, you would see, if you had a camera in the clubhouse, you would see, you know, there's a room where guys are just literally studying video, you know, like an hour before the game, you know, looking at every little... at bat that the pitchers had in the last week, how is he's pitch guys, that sort of stuff. And honestly, I don't know if you would really see this. I mean, it depends if the guys understood that the cameras are around, but guys so often talk about, you know, every game, just be consistent, you know. But I honestly think that on Sunday you would have seen guys a little excited about facing Clayton Kershaw. You know, I'm sure that as they were coming to the park and as they were in the clubhouse before the game, that got them going a little bit. You know, I don't know that there's a ton to see in a pregame setting in baseball, but there is some interesting things that you would be able to focus in on.
We have Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star in studio. We will stop with the All-Star game talk after this and talk about the Royals and expectations for the second half. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan with Rustin Dodd. Now let's get into the second half. Enough of the All-Star game. That's for you, Mike Boddicker. The Kansas City Royals getting ready for the second half. Now, again, I will preface this by saying that several of the teams that they're going to play in the first month of the second half are just below 500. But still, it's an interesting stat. 30 of their first 33 games in the second half will be against teams below 500. But right now, the Royals, as we get ready for the second half, three games out of first and a half game out of second place. And then in the wild card standings with the New York Yankees and Tampa Bay Rays right now claiming the two wild card spots, the Twins are a game out and the Royals are a game and a half out. Now, Rustin, the big news, and you wrote about this, the possibility of Nate Karns being out for the rest of the year. And again, boy, up until a couple of years ago, few Royals fans had really heard of thoracic outlet syndrome.
Is this
all over baseball, or the Royals just snake bit with this thing?
I mean, I think it's all over baseball more than you think. I don't necessarily think there's any sort of common thread to why the Royals have had, you know, Kyle Zimmer had it last year, Luke Cochaver had it last year, now. And actually Dylan G had something similar, although his was more, there's neuro, which is like something with the nerves. There's also vascular, thoracic outlet syndrome, which is, I think Dylan G had something after he had some blood clots last year. If you
and
remember
Chris
that.
Young had it before,
Chris right. Young had it before. I mean, Matt Harvey had this. It's, if you look at the list of pitchers that have had this, it's a kind of all over baseball. I think it's kind of a combination, I think, of, mostly awareness that I think maybe 10 or 15 years ago people didn't know what this was, and doctors didn't necessarily know how to diagnose it or fix it. So that might be why you're seeing more of it. It's obviously, you know, I maybe should ask more about this, but I'm not sure that the Royals would have been able to know that Nate Karns was going to happen, or at least maybe they could have known that he was susceptible to this, or it was kind of going down this road, but it would have been, I guess, difficult to predict that it was going to happen right now. But it's looking like he's going to have the surgery. The Royals are pretty cautious about when they talk about injuries and what they say, and the fact that Ned Yost told me that it was likely that he was going to have thoracic outlet surgery suggests to me that basically it is going to happen. It's just a matter of him seeing the specialist and getting everything kind of lined up. Although Ned said it wasn't definite or definitive, but it sounds like it's a pretty likely scenario.
So if that does happen, how likely is it that the Royals go out and make a move for a fifth starter?
I think it's quite likely. I think the question then becomes, what are they able to add in payroll, and what do they have to give up? And that's going to dictate where they can shop, you know, whether they're shopping for the two or three or four, you know, frontline guys that are available, or are they kind of scrounging around for the back end guys, which seems like a more likely scenario. But you do hear kind of some whispers and some murmurs that the Royals are going to be fairly aggressive at the trade deadline. It's just, I think it's a matter of, do they have the pieces to put together a deal where they could go out and get a Sonny Gray or somebody of that caliber? I'm still skeptical, but I certainly think that the Royals are looking in that direction, to try to be as aggressive as possible.
But the more, and the more money, it's like a sliding scale, the more money they're willing to take on or pay, the less they would have to give up in prospects. Or if they don't want to take on money, they might have to give up more in prospects. So that's why it's significant as to what they have available as far as money to pay players.
Well, you'd have to give up a lot.
No, I mean, I think this is what we're talking about here, and I could be wrong, but I think if you're looking at the Royals looking for a Sonny Gray caliber player, and he's under contract for a while now, so that
he's not a free agent until 2020.
That would be huge.
I mean, you're the first name that comes to mind is somebody that you're parting ways with is somebody like Raul Mondesi.
Right.
I mean, that's what you're really, as they always say, these trades hurt. And that's kind of the first name that I think you're looking for if you're putting together a package for a frontline starter. You know, I had one kind of somebody with another team saying, you know, hypothetical, this is just kind of talking in, about scenarios. And, you know, it's could the Royals give up Raul Mondesi? Certainly you wouldn't want to. I mean, with his ability and what you project over the next 4 to 5, 6 years. But I guess this could they bring Alcides Escobar back on a 2-year deal for $5 to $6 million and cover yourself there? Yeah, you could find ways to do it. It just this is the difficulty of these trades. You got to give up something, and the Royals don't have a lot to give up.
Some of the names that have been thrown out there, I know, that, like I've mentioned, that John Heyman suggested Derek Holland and Jaime Garcia would be fits. Baseball Prospectus Kansas City and David Leske put together a nice list. Guys like Trevor Cahill from the Padres or Scott Feldman from the Reds would be interesting. And those are guys that it doesn't seem like it would take
that's
too much.
Yeah, that's your more realistic,
right,
you know, B to C level prospects that the Royals could probably part ways with.
And say, for instance, Scott Feldman, not a sexy name at all, but when you look over the past 3 years, including this year, an ERA in the 3.8s and 3.9s, a WHIP, you know, high 1.2s, 1.3. I'd take that as their fifth starter right now. That's giving you a chance to win, eating innings, and not having to deal with the inconsistency of a guy like Junis or Skoglund. So even though it seems like a minor deal, I think that would make a very major impact with the Royals in their rotation. They wouldn't have to give up a whole lot. That's why I'm pretty confident they're going to make a deal that's going to help them and not have to give up one of those guys like Mondesi.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Scott Feldman is like the placeholder for the guy that's always available right at the, you know,
right,
on the free agent market towards the end. Doug Fister and Scott Feldman always seem like they're out there.
No, don't make promises you can't keep. If Doug Fister comes here, we're shutting it all down, Drake, all right?
But no, I to me, that seems like the most likely scenario, that the Royals are players in that sort of trade, especially for a starting pitcher. Now there's, you know, I think they could be active looking for relievers.
Yes.
In that sort of area too, but looking for starters, it seems like the most likely scenario is that it's somebody like that. But I think we'll see how aggressive and how the chips fall, as the month continues.
Doug Fister's coming off a pretty rough outing.
Wow.
Doug Fister got pounded by the Rangers.
I'm telling you, look at Feldman's numbers. Not terrible. Nope. I mean, people would yawn at it, but he solidified the fifth spot.
Why don't we just call up Richard Lovelady and be done with it?
What can you tell us about Richard Lovelady?
So, well, he's not a starting pitcher.
Ah.
He's going to be a reliever. He's kind of a max effort reliever type guy. But it's actually kind of funny. The Royals, I don't think that they'd like to. He was drafted last year in like the 10th round,
mm-hmm,
out of Kennesaw State or some small school. But it was a great pick by the Royals. He's a left-hander who throws 95, 96 with sort of a slingshot delivery a la Matt Strom, but maybe even a little bit more max effort than Strom, and has been dominating at Wilmington and now is at Northwest Arkansas and has pitched pretty well. And so I think they view him as a potential guy in September that could be like a one-out left-handed reliever just to come in and kind of, as one scout with another team put it, you know, there's not a lot of pitching involved with this guy right now. He's still a little bit unpolished, but it's sort of just like, hey, here's what I got and see if you can hit it. And he throws, you know, mid to upper 90s from the left side with a sort of some deception in his delivery. So he does seem like if they needed like a left-handed power guy as like a one out just option in September, he's kind of on the list of candidates.
Look, we've had our fun with Brooks Pounders. It seemed like he warmed up to the to the jokes about his name. I mean, you mentioned Doug Fister. He deals with that all the time. Is this young man just going to get it out of the way and say, look, Dick Lovelady's my name. Let's just go. We know. He can come up here and he can say Richard Lovelady all day long, and he's going to be called Dick Lovelady by fans and media alike. I know, Rustin, you're going to keep it clean, but that's just how it's going to be. Don't you just say, okay, that's my name. Let's go. Get them all out of the way and let's move on with a fine career here with the Royals. So I'd be like, does he go by Richard? Does he go, is there any?
I think it's Rich, Richard or Rich. I don't know.
His baseball reference page just says Richard Lovelady.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity.
He did go to Kennesaw State.
There. Right. Yeah.
So. I kind of like the idea of Richard Lovelady, though, because it just kind of, I don't know, makes it,
if you're calling the game, here comes Dick Lovelady. Yeah. Like, yeah, you better believe it.
That's right.
God bless you.
Bring him in. Mm-hmm. You insert him into the game. In Northwest Arkansas, he's made 3 appearances so far, 6 innings, only 3 hits allowed, 9 strikeouts, no runs. So, well, no earned runs. So, that's a short period of time that he's been in Double A, but he'd be an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
Okay,
but he's not the answer in the rotation.
No, Nate. He's not. He's a reliever, but Nate would like to see him in the rotation.
Hey, I just want to see Dick Lovelady up here.
You'd like to see him inserted into the rotation
at all costs.
Yep. Okay, so let me bring up another name that has been an interesting topic of discussion here the past couple of weeks, and this is totally hypothetical, but I brought it up. Okay, so Bubba Starling is now hitting well at Triple A, and so I just brought up one day to Nate and Jake. Okay, so if there was a starting pitcher out there on the market that the Royals could get, there would be a clear upgrade, and the opposing team said, okay, we want Bubba. In return, Nate said he'd be reluctant to give him up. Jake said he'd be reluctant to give him up. And I look at it like 3 months ago, his value was zero. And if you could turn him into a possible another trip to the playoffs, I would seriously consider it. Mike Boddicker, again, I reference him. He'd be willing to trade him, I think, for literally for a cup of coffee, which I don't think that would be a good deal for anyone. How much are you buying in to Bubba Starling actually figuring it out enough to where if Kane isn't retained, then Bubba Starling could be the opening day center fielder for the Royals?
I'm a little bit, I don't know if I would go that far. That seems, to expect him to be that next season.
It seems aggressive.
Yeah. Now, am I buying that he's a major league player, on some level? Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's hit it at Omaha. His defense is above average. It's a premium level defense in center field. Is he going to play in the major leagues? Yes.
Clearly, a defensive replacement for sure right now.
Is he an everyday player that you want to count on going into 2018? I don't think so. Not yet. I don't think I've seen enough, or we've seen enough of the track record at Omaha. But it's encouraging. It's trending in the right direction, and he's not young anymore, so I don't want to say that, but he has his prime years ahead of him, and if there is, you know, like a, you know, I guess a consolation prize for a guy being slow to the big leagues, it's that he doesn't become a free agent until a lot longer down the road. So let's say, you know, like Lorenzo Cain, he didn't become an everyday player until he was 25. Let's say that Bubba does figure it out. All of a sudden, you've got him under club control through his late 20s into his early 30s, as opposed to, you know, a Mike Moustakas or an Eric Hosmer, who now are going to be free agents at the ages of 27, 28. So, you'd like a guy, the best players in baseball come up when they're 21, 22, and that's when they're successful and then they have great careers. Bubba's not that, but at least you have him potentially under club control at a cheap rate through what could be his best years, if this is sort of who he is and he's figured out a way to at least be, you know, adequate with the at the plate and with the bat.
Hey, the guy that's going to win AL Rookie of the Year this year is 25 years old, Aaron Judge.
Yeah, you know, that's funny, isn't that? Not to derail the conversation, but for as much attention as he's gotten and as much as we've talked about him, I mean, this was a guy last year at age 24 couldn't hit at, you know, in a small sample with the Yankees, and it took him forever to get to the big leagues. So, yeah, I mean,
there were questions about whether he was gonna be a 4A player or not last year, and now he's the right now the favorite not only for Rookie of the Year but MVP. And so we got a break, but I'll leave it with this: what is more likely to happen if Kane moves on? The Royals have Bubba as the opening day center fielder, or they bring Jerod Dyson back like on a 2-year deal, and he plays center field for the Royals.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it's more likely that they would sign Jerod Dyson than it's Bubba, but I think it's more likely that they sign somebody like Jerod Dyson, and he could be one. He could be a candidate for sure, but mm-hmm. I think a stopgap sort of guy to try to bridge it to Bubba or somebody else.
Khalil Lee.
Yeah. You know, they've got Donnie DeWeese. I don't know how he's hitting at.
I like him, too.
I mean, he's a potential guy in center field. They don't have a lot of center fielders in their system, but... And I feel like Khalil Lee might be more of a corner outfielder. I'm not sure if he's a defensively.
Just get him up here.
But I think that sort of Jerod Dyson deal. And can I tell you a funny story about Dyson?
Sure.
When I was in Seattle last week, I actually talked to Jerod and I brought that up sort of. And I said, hey, just I guess you can never close the book on Kansas City. I was like, you're going to be a free agent. Lorenzo Cain's going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. Like, and he sort of saw where I was going. And he basically was saying, his point was like, hey, I don't know if that's going to happen. And his point was that it was business and he is looking for the biggest deal possible. But hey, maybe that's in Kansas City. You never know.
Yeah,
but,
I feel like maybe the Royals might value him more than other teams. So.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
But he was like, I gave my best years to Kansas City. I don't know if it would have to be perfect.
Oh, I think if they said you're starting in center field, here's a 2 or 3 year deal that I think you might bite. Let's take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, wrapping things up with Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. And again, I remind you, if you're looking for a place to go have lunch, I'll be at Schlotsky's in Overland Park at 120th and Metcalf from 11 until 1. You can get a small original or small smoked turkey sandwich with chips and a 20-ounce drink for only $4.99. Stop by, register to win some prizes, get the lunch special for $4.99. It's good at both locations at 120th and Metcalf and in Olathe at 122nd and Strangline. But I'll be at 120th and Metcalf from 11 until 1 at Schlotsky's today. So stop by and enjoy a $4.99 lunch special. All right, Rustin, one of the reasons that I'm optimistic about the Royals in the second half is I think Ian Kennedy and Jason Hamill and Danny Duffy are all going to be, if they stay healthy, much better in the second half. I think they're going to trade for another starting pitcher. So I think you could see four starting pitchers for the Royals have better production than what they had in the first half. That I do think Jason Vargas is going to regress, but even if he has like a 3.5 ERA, it's still solid. I don't think he's going to be terrible. So I think the rotation is cause for to be optimistic. For you, tell me why Royals fans should be optimistic that they could make the playoffs, and then tell me maybe the big reasons why you'd be concerned about their playoff chances.
You know what makes me optimistic about the Royals is if you just look at the wild card standings, not only they're a game and a half out of the second wild card, they're a game and a half out of both wild cards. And if you look at the teams that are competing and will be in that running, you know, I'm actually, if you look at some of the, you know, the Yankees, I think, will be in it most of the year. The Rays, I'm not completely sold on, although I think they'll have an opportunity to stick in it. But a team like Texas is 2 or 3 games under. That's a team that I would watch for. You know, maybe Seattle, they have maybe the talent to make a run. Baltimore has a track record of being around, but their pitching has been sort of a disaster. We've said it all. You look at up and down the league, there's a lot of parity. There are a lot of teams with flaws. I just feel like the Royals might be of that group in the wild card. And this is, I still think they might have a chance to kind of hang around with Cleveland for a lot of the summer, but if you just look at the wild card and look at the teams they'll be competing against, I think they stack up pretty well if their offense is there like it was over the last 2 months and not like it was in April.
I totally agree. Nate?
Yeah, I think the offense should be better. And one of the big things is that they got rid of some of the dead weight in their lineup from the month of April. You know? I mean, they brought up Bonifacio and they brought up Whit Merrifield, and those guys are actually producing at some level. They're not lighting the world on fire, but they're giving some production. They were getting absolutely nothing out of those spots before that.
And now they're getting nothing out of DH, but between Moss and Soler, man, you have to believe one of them's going to get hot. Do you have any indication as to who's going to be given the first chance? Or are they going to try to stick with one guy to see who gets hot, or just mix and match until somebody shows something?
Well, I think they wanted to try to give Soler some consistent at-bats when he came back up, and they did, and the production hasn't necessarily been there. Mm-mm. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, he still has the option to go back down to the minor leagues and get at bats if he's not playing every day. Brandon Moss doesn't. They sort of have to ride with him at the major league level. So we'll see. You know, we were talking about this during the break, and it might be lower on the priority list, but I could see the Royals also poking around at sort of a corner outfielder, DH type, at the deadline. Somebody, because not only do you need the production at DH, but do you trust that Jorge Bonifacio is going to be this guy for the rest of the season? I think long-term, you love the potential and the way it's looking, but do you want to count on him for a team that has aspirations to go to the playoffs? You know, so there you could have a guy that could play right a little bit, could play, you know, left if Alex Gordon is not producing like he has been, but could also DH just to give him some production at that spot. So we'll see. You know, there's always a lot of veteran bats type guys out there that aren't very expensive in terms of what the acquisition cost would be. So, you know, maybe there's a guy out there that could fit in their lineup as well, or at least fit on their roster.
Let me say this and duck the hell out of the way. Now, here's a slash line for you. 316, 346, 544 with 10 homers, 18 steals, 16 doubles, and 4 triples in 237 at-bats. That's Raul Mondesi at AAA. Can he hit well enough to where they would call him back up, put him at second base, put Whit Merrifield out in the outfield, and maybe Bonifacio at DH to try to get some more production?
I suppose they could, but Raul Mondesi just hasn't proven he can do it at the major league level yet. So
maybe Soler's a cautionary tale there.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I believe in Raul Mondesi over the long term. I just don't know if you want to experiment as you're trying to win games in July and August.
That's Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. Meet me at Schlotsky's for lunch at 120th and Metcalf right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.